are listening to AfterSight. This recording is intended solely for individuals who are blind or have low vision.
Thanks for joining us for the March 9th Saturday reading of the Arapaho County News. My name is Tim Elliott. Today I'll be reading the following main articles. Uneven growth in Southeast Aurora prompting new attendance boundaries for Altitude Woodland Elementary Schools by Krista Ngo, Sentinel, Colorado. Aurora, $80 million farm water purchase from Arkansas Valley, not a buy and dry by Max Levy and Kristen O., Sentinel, Colorado. Feds challenge grocery merger by Haley Lenny. Dozens more layoffs hit locals at Dish Network by Nina Joss. Wife of cancer victim not shy about colon cancer screenings by Monty Whaley. Bio One of Colorado, an emergency biohazard cleanup service goes beyond cleaning by Haley Lenny. And I'll also be reading some various stories and articles. Uneven growth in Southeast Aurora prompting new attendance boundaries for Altitude Woodland Elementary Schools. Growing pains in Southeast Aurora are prompting Cherry Creek School District to change attendance boundary lines that would affect two elementary schools, a move that parents say will break up the community and put pedestrian safety at risk. Altitude Elementary School is overcrowded. Woodland Elementary School, which is about a mile away, has plenty of room to spare. To remedy this, the district will change the attendance boundary, meaning that starting in 2024-2025 school year, some Altitude students will have to attend Woodland. Altitude and Woodland Elementary Schools are the newest district's newest elementary schools, built in 2018 and 2022, respectively. They were built as a response to new developments being built in the South Shore and Blackstone communities. However, development in the Overland Ranch area was delayed, and there was higher than expected growth in South Shore. This meant that enrollment for the two schools became uneven. Both schools were built to accommodate approximately 650 students, according to district spokesperson Lauren Schnell. However, approximately 800 students are enrolled at Altitude Elementary School, with 866 projected to enroll next school year. At Woodland Elementary School, 479 students are enrolled, with 488 projected for next year. The current attendance boundary for Altitude Elementary School encompasses areas north of East Smoky Hill Parkway, east of South Powhatan Road, and south of South Shore Parkway. District staff members advised the Cherry Creek School Board to choose option A during a study session February 23rd. It was one of three options presented to the community. However, the board will not vote on changes until their next board meeting at 7 p.m. March 11 at Sky Vista Middle School, 4500 South Himalaya Street. Option A means that the southeastern boundary for Altitude ends at East South Shore Parkway. According to the report that was presented during the study session, this option was chosen because it was geographically closer to Woodland and because it would affect the least amount of current Altitude students. However, the report also stated the parents will have to drive past Altitude on their way to Woodland, which would not reduce the traffic in the area. Multiple area parents said this could also make it difficult and unsafe for children in the area to walk to school. Snell said she was unaware of any existing crosswalks on Smoky Hill Parkway. During a February 12th board meeting, about a dozen parents spoke about the attendance boundary changes. Many said that this would break up their school community. During the February study session, staff members said that current fourth grade students at Altitude can continue to attend that school when they go into fifth grade. Their younger siblings can stay as well, but must move to Woodland when their older siblings goes to middle school. But Altitude and Woodland schools feed into Fox Ridge Middle School. $80 million farm water purchase from Arkansas Valley, not a buy and dry. The city of Aurora is poised to sign a deal that would allow it to periodically divert more than 7 billion gallons of water from the Arkansas River to the city every decade with the purchase of farmland in rural southeast Colorado. While the $80 million sale would see more water piped away from the already parched lower Arkansas Valley, the city says the 4,800 6-acre property in Otero County will continue to be used to raise crops when Aurora isn't actively tapping its water rights. "It's a new idea," said Aurora Water General Manager Marshall Brown. "Nothing like this has really been done exactly in Colorado. We're not doing that municipalities have done in the past, which is taking land out of agriculture, which does have an economic impact," utility spokesperson Greg Baker said, alluding to so-called buy and dry transactions in which farmland is bought and left to aridify as the water used for irrigation is siphoned to cities along the Front Range. Rural communities where large numbers of farmers have sold their water rights to cities are at risk of drying up with the soil. The Lower Arkansas Valley is often cited by sustainability activists as a cautionary example of buy and dry run amok, even as other economic stressors persist. Aurora has inked its share of buy and dry deals in the valley, buying up water across the Arkansas Valley starting in the 1970s and laying claim to most of the shares in the Rocky Ford Ditch through a series of purchases that began in the 80s. Facing blowback after its initial run on Arkansas River water, Aurora has since agreed to replant native grasses on land in the valley that it has dried out, discouraging the spread of invasive weeds that might otherwise take root. The city also helped pay for water-efficient drip irrigation systems for some of the farmers who sold their Rocky Ford Ditch shares. City of Aurora officials and representatives of CNA companies to whom Aurora will lease the land, structures, equipment, and water needed to grow crops insist the latest transaction is not a buy and dry. "We're infusing $80 million into essentially sustaining the local agricultural communities and the products that are going to some of the other businesses and customers from there," Brown said. "We're really infusing stability into the agricultural future of this farming area." Otero County Commissioner Tim Nabenshue said locals have expressed mixed feelings about Aurora's latest water deal. He said some Otero County residents believe this will lead to another dry-up situation, while others are interested in conducting business with municipalities like Aurora. Nabenshue said the county hasn't been involved in the deal, but that it will intervene if there are negative impacts, such as an increase in property taxes or if the land dries up despite Aurora's assurances. "We understand water is a necessity to function and to grow, which is what Aurora and other municipalities north of us are trying to do," Nabenshue said. "From our standpoint, as the county, we just want to make sure that when these negotiations take place, that both sides can benefit from the deals. The property eyed by the city is irrigated by the Catlin Canal, which intercepts the Arkansas River about 40 miles southeast of Pueblo. Shares in the Pisgah Reservoir and the Larkspur and Otero ditches are also included in the purchase, though Baker said they are supplemental and represent some storage in that area, as well as a small fraction of the water historically used to irrigate the land. Under existing intergovernmental agreements and the City of Aurora's new agreement with C&A companies, the city will be allowed to tap the water rights associated with the Otero County property no more than once a year, three times in any 10-year period, with each withdrawal not to exceed 7,500 acre-feet, or about 2.4 billion gallons of water. Aurora is and will continue to be limited to calling on its Arkansas River rights when its storage reservoirs are no more than 60% full. The Otero County farm has been producing for decades, and it's currently owned by Philip Chavez, who serves on the board of the Catlin Canal Company. C&A companies will use the land to grow smaller grains, grass, hay, alfalfa, and other produce. "On the agricultural side, this is really a win-win for us," Carl Newquest of CNA Company said, adding that the economic impact on the county of withdrawing water from the land for 3 out of every 10 years is expected to be very minimal. Nyquist said CNA could even use other water that it controls to irrigate the property when their water owned by Aurora is unavailable. City Water Resource Manager Rick Keenitz said the company will continue to employ workers on the property to farm, control weeds, and dust during dry years, which the city will be expected to announce to CNA several months in advance. CNA is not going to have to lay people off or reduce their workforce, Kienes said. There's a lot of work that needs to be done, and we're going to keep their workforce working. Brown also said the project will have a positive impact by ensuring the land continues to be used for agriculture, including the cultivation of feed crops for local livestock producers. Proceeds from CNA's farm lease will help replenish the cash and reserves spent by Aurora Water on the purchase. City officials also stated that it may also use development fees to shore up reservoirs, and Baker said cash could be saved up while the city undertakes a bond issue. In the past 20 years, Aurora has twice leased water from the river basin. In 2004 and 2005, the city leased rights from the Rocky Ford Highline Canal to help with recovery from the 2002 drought, the news release said. Those leases were in addition to large prior purchases. The release added that the Otero County arrangement will make it easier for Aurora to rely on the Arkansas River for water. The additional water would be stored in Pueblo Reservoir and traded for the same amount of water in Twin and Turquoise Lakes, where the city uses pipelines and pumps to transport water into the South Platte River, which it pulls water from directly. As for the impact on Aurora water customers, Brown said the city does not anticipate the deal will result in a noticeable increase in rates. If not completely non-existent, it would be so minimal they would never see it, he said. Aurora City Council is expected to vote March 11th on finalizing the deal, which Baker said would close in early to mid-April. Biden uses feisty State of the Union to contrast with Trump, sell voters on a second term, Colorado comment. By Zeke Miller, AP White House correspondent. President Joe Biden delivered a defiant argument for a second term in his State of the Union speech Thursday night, lacing into GOP frontrunner Donald Trump for espousing resentment, revenge, and retribution, and for jeopardizing freedom at home and abroad. Reveling in the political moment, Biden fired multiple broadsides at my predecessor without ever mentioning Trump by name, 13 times in all, raising his voice repeatedly as he worked to quell voter concerns about his age and job performance while sharpening the contrast with his all-but-certain November rival. The scrapey tone from Biden was a sharp break from his often humdrum daily appearances and was designed to banish doubts about whether the 81-year-old president, the country's oldest ever, is still up for the job. For 68 minutes in the House chamber, Biden goaded Republicans over their policies on immigration, taxes, and more, invited call-and-response banter with fellow Democrats, and seemed to relish the fight. I know I may not look like it, but I've been around a while, Biden said, addressing his age head-on. When you get to be my age, certain things become clearer than ever before. Colorado comment. Congressperson Jason Crow, Democrat, Aurora. President Joe Biden is right. Putin will not stop at Ukraine. We will not walk away. We will not bow down. History is indeed watching. On the immigration crisis, look at the facts. Democrats are working to address the border. Republicans are not. Congressperson Lauren Boebert, Republican rifle. Joe, no one with a brain likes your amnesty bill that would immediately give work permits to all illegal aliens that you release into America. Senator Michael Bennett, Democrat, Colorado. Tonight, President Biden began his speech by calling on the House of Representatives to pass Ukraine aid. Ukraine is out of bullets, and they have earned our support. Since Putin started this lawless war over 2 years ago, the Ukrainian people have sacrificed their lives and won battle after battle against all odds. Without U.S. leadership at this moment, Ukraine is at risk. Europe is at risk, and democracies around the world are at risk. We must not walk away from Ukraine. Governor Jared Polis. Tonight, President Biden outlined a future-focused vision that emphasized the issues important to Coloradans, including protecting freedom and democracy, investing in education, and reducing health care and housing costs. Healthcare and housing are the two highest costs that Coloradans face. And over the last few years, we have taken important steps to save people money. In Colorado, we are working to increase our housing supply and reduce costs for homeowners and renters. And we have capped the cost of insulin for all Coloradans, created the Colorado option and reinsurance efforts, and are working to reduce prescription drug cost. We look forward to continuing Colorado's leadership in building on this important work alongside the President and his administration. Together, we will continue working to move Colorado and our country forward. Congressperson Diana DeGette, Democrat, Denver. Passing the bipartisan Safer Communities Act was a step in the right direction, but like President Biden said, our work is far from over to save lives. That includes passing my legislation to ban high-capacity gun magazines. Congressperson Doug Lamborn, Republican, Colorado Springs. The Biden administration has continually proven that the state of our union is declining under his leadership. The president can make as many addresses as he wants with as many claims to victory, but Americans will continue to see through his false claims. Noting he was born during World War II and came of political age during the upheaval of the 60s, Biden declared, "My lifetime has taught me to embrace freedom and democracy, a future based on the core values that have defined America, honesty, decency, dignity, equality, to respect everyone, to give everyone a fair shot, to give hate no safe harbor." Now, some other people my age see a different story. An American story of resentment, revenge, and retribution. That's not me. The president linked Trump's praise for those who overran the Capitol in an attempt to subvert the 2020 election with anti-democratic threats abroad. Freedom and democracy are under attack both at home and overseas at the very same time, Biden said as he appealed for Congress to support Ukraine's efforts to defend itself against Russia's two-year-old invasion. History is watching. Biden directly referenced the January 6, 2021 insurrection at the Capitol, calling out those who have played it down. "My predecessor, and some of you here, seek to bury the truth about January 6th. I will not do that," Biden said. "This is a moment to speak the truth and to bury the lies. Here's a simple truth. You can't love your country only when you win." The president showcased his accomplishments on infrastructure and manufacturing and pushed Congress to approve more aid to Ukraine, tougher migration rules, and lower drug prices. He also sought to remind voters of the situation he inherited when he entered office in 2021 amid a raging pandemic and a contracting economy. The 81-year-old president was closely watched, just not for his message, but for whether he could deliver it with vigor and command. White House aides said Biden was aiming to prove his doubters wrong by flashing his combative side and trying to needle Republicans over positions he believes are out of step with the country, particularly on access to abortion, but also tax policy and health care. It's part of his campaign year effort to use even official speeches to clarify the choice for voters at the ballot box this fall. Taking a victory lap in selling his legislative accomplishments, such as one that bolsters manufacturing of computer chips nationwide, Biden veered from his prepared script to take a dig at Republicans who voted against such policies but are eager to take credit for them back home. "If any of you don't want that money in your districts," Biden said, "just let me know." The president was speaking before a historically ineffective Congress. In the GOP-led House, Speaker Mike Johnson took power 5 months ago after the chaotic ouster of former Speaker Kevin McCarthy. Legislators are still struggling to approve funding bills for the current year and have been deadlocked for months on foreign assistance bills to help Ukraine stave off Russia's invasion and support Israel's fight against Hamas. The State of the Union address is a marquee night on the White House calendar, offering presidents a direct line to a captive audience of lawmakers and dignitaries in the House chamber and tens of millions of viewers at home. But even so, the night has lost some of its luster as viewership has declined. Biden aides inside the White House and on his campaign had hoped for some fresh viral moments, Like when he tussled last year with heckling Republicans and chided them for their past efforts to cut Medicare and Social Security. Johnson, eager to avoid a similar episode this year, urged Republicans in a private meeting Wednesday to show decorum during the speech, according to a person familiar with his remarks to lawmakers. He appeared to have limited success. A number of House Republicans began to stand up and leave the chamber as Biden discussed raising taxes on billionaires and corporations. Others, like Johnson, remained in their chairs and shook their heads. Biden engaged in a loud call and response with lawmakers as he rhetorically questioned whether the tax code was fair and whether billionaires and corporations needed another $2 trillion in tax breaks, as he charged Republicans want. Biden also raised the problems of shrinkflation, companies putting fewer pretzels in the jar and less yogurt in sealed cups, and so-called junk fees on services. Neither is a prime driver of inflation, but the White House hopes to show consumers that Biden is fighting for them. One of the most contentious moments of his speech came during his remarks on immigration, when Biden was running down the endorsements by conservative groups of the bipartisan border legislation that Republicans killed last month. Some in the audience appeared to yell and interject, and Biden shot back, "I know you know how to read." As Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene, decked out in pro-Trump paraphernalia, continued to shout at Biden, the president held up a white button that the Georgia Republican had handed him early bearing the name of Laken Riley, who authorities say was killed by a Venezuelan national who unlawfully crossed the U.S. in September 2022. "Laken Riley," Biden said, calling her an innocent young woman who was killed by an illegal. He expressed condolences to her family, saying his heart goes out to them. And congressional Republican leaders were showcasing one of their newest lawmakers through the State of the Union rebuttal in order to make a generational contrast with Biden. Alabama Senator Katie Britt, the youngest Republican woman elected to the Senate, planned to paint a picture of a nation that seems to be slipping away and one where our families are hurting. "Right now, our commander-in-chief is not in command. The free world deserves better than a dithering and diminished leader," Britt was to say, according to excerpts released Thursday evening. "America deserves leaders who recognize that secure borders, stable prices, safe streets, and a strong defense are the cornerstones of a great nation." Biden painted an optimistic future for the country as the massive pieces of legislation he signed into law during his first 2 years in office are implemented. But he also is set to warn that the progress he sees at home and abroad is fragile and particularly vulnerable if Trump returns to the White House. Trump, for his part, said he planned to respond in real time to Biden's remarks on his Truth Social platform. This year, Biden faced heightened emotions, particularly among his base supporters, over his staunch backing of Israel's war against Hamas in Gaza. The White House had initially hoped a short-term ceasefire would be in place by the speech. It blames Hamas not yet accepting a deal brokered by the U.S. and its allies. A slew of Democrats and Republicans wore pins and stickers in honor of the Israeli hostages still being held captive in Gaza. Meanwhile, several House progressives wore Palestinian kiefs, the black and white checkered scarves that have come to symbolize Palestinian solidarity. Biden's motorcade took a circuitous route to the Capitol as hundreds of pro-ceasefire demonstrators tried to disrupt his path from the White House. Amid growing concerns about the dire humanitarian situation in Gaza, Biden announced in his address that he has directed the U.S. military to establish a temporary port on the Gaza coast aimed at increasing the flow of aid into the beleaguered territory. The president also issued an empathetic call for lawmakers to pass sorely needed defense assistance for Ukraine. Acute ammunition shortages have allowed Russia to retake the offensive in the two-year-old war. The GOP-controlled House has refused to act on a Senate-passed version of the aid legislation, insisting on new stiffer measures to limit migration at the U.S.-Mexico border, after Trump used his influence to help sink a bipartisan compromise that would have done just that. Access to abortion and fertility treatments was also a key component of Biden's speech, especially in light of a controversial ruling from Alabama Supreme Court that has upended access to in vitro fertilization treatment in the state. One of First Lady Jill Biden's guests for the speech was Kate Cox, who sued Texas and ultimately left her home state to obtain an emergency abortion after a severe fetal anomaly was detected. "If America send me a Congress that supports the right to choose, I promise you, I will restore Roe v. Wade as the law of the land again," Biden said. Several House Democratic women were wearing white, a symbol of women's suffrage, to promote reproductive rights. The White House also invited union leaders, a gun control advocate, and others that Jill Biden and her husband have met as they traveled the country promoting his agenda. The Prime Minister of Sweden, Ulf Kristersson, will attend to mark his country's accession to NATO in the wake of Russia's war in Ukraine. Expelled and disgraced former Rep. George Santos, who still retains floor privileges as an ex-member of Congress, also showed up for the speech. Feds challenge grocery merger. The Federal Trade Commission is challenging Kroger Company's $24.6 billion acquisition of Albertsons COS, Inc., in what would be the largest supermarket merger in U.S. history. The FTC says the proposed deal would eliminate competition between stores, including King Supers and Safeway locations in Colorado, leading to higher prices for groceries and other essential household items. The FTC added that a loss of existing competition would lead to lower quality products and services. The FTC also alleges that the merger would harm grocery workers and unions. Kroger's proposed acquisition of Albertsons would immediately erase aggressive competition for workers, threatening the ability of employees to secure higher wages, better benefits, and improved working conditions. Kroger operates thousands of stores across 36 states, including King Superstores in Colorado. Albertsons also operates thousands of stores across 35 states, including many Safeways. There are a few Albertsons locations left in Colorado, but more than 100 Safeways across Colorado, many of them in the Denver area, including Arvada, Aurora, Brighton, Castle Rock, Conifer, Denver, Elizabeth, Inglewood, Evergreen, Federal Heights, Fort Lupton, Golden, Highlands Ranch, Idaho Springs, Lakewood, Littleton, Lone Tree, North Glen, Parker, Thornton, and Wheat Ridge. Colorado State Treasurer Dave Young lauded the FTC's action. "The risks posed by this merger far outweighed the benefit to the shareholders of Kroger and Albertsons," said Young in a press release. "The merger poses a significant threat to the well-being of Colorado residents," Young had said in a letter to the FTC. "When consolidation harms workers, lowers accessibility of food and medicine, and results in detrimental impacts to local and state economies, it's clear the deal is good for C-suite executives and bad for everybody else," said Young. The FTC has issued an administrative complaint and authorized a lawsuit in federal court to block the proposed acquisition. "This supermarket mega merger comes as American consumers have seen the cost of groceries rise steadily over the last few years," said Henry Liu, director of the FTC's Bureau of Competition, in a press conference. Liu added that the acquisition would also lead to additional grocery price hikes of everyday goods. If the two merged, they would operate more than 5,000 stores, about 4,000 retail pharmacies, and employ nearly 700 employees across 48 states, according to the FTC. Kroger, in a statement reacting to the FTC's announcement, said the merging parties look forward to litigating this action in court. Customers will benefit from lower prices and more choices following the merger close. The company committed to investing $500 million to begin lowering prices day one post-close, and an additional $1.3 billion to improve Albertsons COS stores, Kroger said in the statement issued on February 26. The FTC complaint and request for preliminary relief will be filed jointly with the FTC and State Attorney General in the U.S. District Court for the District of Oregon. Dozen more layoffs hit locals at Dish Network. Colorado-based satellite television provider Dish Network, a subsidiary of EchoStar Corp., plans to lay off another 53 employees in Littleton and Douglas County this spring. The layoff announcement came around the same time that Michael Kelly, the chief of the company's retail mobile phone business, resigned. EchoStar released its 2023 year-end financial results about a week after the latest layoff announcement, which show an approximately 8.6% decrease in total revenue compared to 2022. Back in November, Dish announced it was laying off about 500 employees. And at the start of 2024, as Dish merged with parent company EchoStar, it proceeded to cut 166 more. The newest round of layoffs will impact workers at the 5701 South Santa Fe Drive site in Littleton and at 9601 South Meridian Boulevard in unincorporated Douglas County. Ted Viacheva, a spokesperson for Dish, said he could not specify how many employees would be laid off from each location. Most of the employees affected are in direct sales positions, according to a notice the company filed with the state on February 20th. Several data scientists, engineers, and managers will also lose their jobs. These employees will see their positions terminated on April 20th, according to the notice. A statement from Dish said the recent layoff decision reflects the business focus on improving company performance in an evolving marketplace. After a thorough review of our operations and consideration of a changing business environment, we made the difficult decision to remove 53 positions in our company, the statement said. We will continue to make strategic hires and investments to support our growth. Kelly, who headed up the company's retail wireless business, worked his last day on February 29th, according to a statement from Dish. Hamad Hakhavan, EchoStar's president and chief executive officer, will oversee the retail wireless brands while the company seeks a successor, the statement said. Reporting by Bloomberg noted that Dish has lost mobile subscribers amid competition from several carriers despite its efforts to build a 5G network. EchoStar Corporation, including all of its segments, went from $18.63 billion in revenue 2022 to $17.02 billion in 2023. Its 2023 year-end and fourth-quarter finances were the first time the company reported as a consolidated company, an EchoStar spokesperson said in a conference call on March 1st. The company said its net decrease in revenue primarily resulted from subscriber declines, most significantly in its pay TV segment, which is part of the legacy Dish Network business. Net pay TV subscribers decreased approximately 314,000 in the fourth quarter, compared to a decrease of approximately 268,000 in the same quarter of 2022, it reported. Net loss attributable to EchoStar totaled $2.3 billion for the fourth quarter of 2023, compared to net income attributable to EchoStar of $984 million in the same quarter of 2022. Bucky, Fury Engineer, moves into Lee Gulch by Nina Joss. A new neighbor has painstakingly constructed and moved into a lodge in the neighborhood near Littleton's Heritage High School. Unlike the rest of the homeowners in this area, this neighbor isn't bothered by a little flooding. The newcomer has four long, dark, orangish teeth, an appetite for trees, lots of fur, and a broad, flat tail. No one seems to know exactly when it arrived. It's not even clear whether there is just one or a few of them. But despite the unknowns, one thing is true. There is a beaver in town. It's built a dam on the Lee Gulch, just a short distance southeast of Ashbaugh Pond, near South Windermere Street. And now some residents are excited about it. Walkers may notice the logs and mud that make up its dam or see tooth marks on trees that nod apart. If they are lucky, they might even catch a glimpse of the beaver at work. I did see the beaver, actually, one time, just his tail, one trail user said as she jogged along the Lee Gulch Trail on a Sunday-Monday morning. It was really a cold, cold morning, and it was in the middle of the pond. It was very exciting. I've lived here 3 years, and I've never seen him before. While beavers have their fans, they also have critics, as the animals can bring challenges. The beaver has also caught the attention of local park officials. Madeline Frazier, senior park ranger at South Suburban Park and Recreation District, said workers are currently monitoring the beaver activity, keeping an eye on how many trees it takes down and watching for potential flooding. The gulch is designed to help divert floodwater, she said. Those man-made waterways are in there to help control that flooding. And when beavers dam up an area, it does cause that water level to rise, and then that floodway can't function as it was designed to. Flooding could damage property of park infrastructure in the area, she added. The natural area where the beaver set up its home is roughly 100 to 200 feet wide, bookended by houses on both sides. The space does not appear big enough to sustain a beaver for long, Frazier said, adding that a single beaver can take down up to 200 trees a year. If a beaver is in a national forest and takes down 200 trees a year out of a million trees, 200 trees in Lee Gulch is pretty much every single tree in Lee Gulch, she said. And it's difficult because we have a lot of other species in there, such as migratory birds, squirrels, raccoons, insects, that rely on those trees in order to survive as well. If the district deems the beaver's activity problematic, they may need to relocate it, Frazier said. The North American beaver is native to Colorado. From 1822 to 1840, the Rocky Mountains were a hotspot for trappers and traders who sought beavers for their pelts, according to Colorado Encyclopedia. By 1815, beavers had nearly vanished in much of North America, according to the National Park Service. Wildlife experts estimate that before the fur trade, as many as 200 million beavers lived in the area now encompassed by the lower 48 states. Although the population has recovered significantly, it is still far from pre-colonial times. Nowadays, there are an estimated 10 to 15 million beavers on the continent, and the species is not deemed threatened or endangered. We have a large and healthy beaver population in the state, said Cara Van Hoos from Colorado Parks and Wildlife. As far as this particular park, I don't think we've seen one there in recent years. However, she added, Littleton is no stranger to beavers. Beavers are found on the High Line Canal and along the South Platte River, and their dams can be good for ecosystems, she said. Beavers can be known for creating wetlands in areas that previously weren't, she said. When you build a dam, of course, water will build up, and then that just creates more plants and animals in the area are drawn to it. Watching the Lee Gulch beaver, a local resident named Steve, who is a dam engineer by trade, marveled at the beaver's craftsmanship. When I look at this, I can see this guy is pretty smart, Steve said, gesturing at the wetland area next to the dam. If he had put it in a narrow section, when you get a higher flow, you get a high velocity, and it would break it. I think this is probably his final design. Steve named the beaver Bucky because of his buck teeth. Van Hoos said if beavers are causing problems, local districts have been known to manage them by making areas less welcoming, like by wrapping wires around trees. They could also remove the dam to encourage the beaver to move elsewhere. If other mitigation efforts don't work, South Suburban could choose to kill the beaver, Van Hoos said. Fraser said doing so would be a last resort. We work with our district wildlife manager, and we work with private rehabilitators to see if there is an area that we can relocate the beaver to, she said. That's really the ideal solution. We're not looking at doing anything else if that's what we can do. For now, the beaver, a.k.a. Bucky, is enjoying the gulch. There's no certainty about whether the district will take any action or need to. In the meantime, Van Hoos recommended that people using the Lee Gulch Trail respect the beaver and its space by keeping their distance, keeping dogs on leashes, and refraining from feeding it. Wife of cancer victim not shy about colon cancer screenings. Katie Kellerman is used to making uncomfortable conversations on a subject that gets little or no attention in polite society. I go around a lot talking about butt stuff, Kellerman said Friday. But that's okay, Kellerman said, because she is just following the wishes of her late husband, Luke. He wanted to get the word out about colon cancer so people could avoid what he went through, Katie Kellerman said. He made that his final mission in life. Luke was 32 when he was diagnosed with colorectal cancer, and he died in October 2017 at age 34, his wife said. Luke worked his dream job as assistant turf manager with the Denver Broncos before he got sick. He then became a driving force behind Fight Like a Bronco, an effort to raise funds and awareness about all cancers, including colorectal cancer. Katie, who was married to Luke for 10 years, picked up the mantle left by Luke to talk to various groups about the rising danger of colorectal cancer. On Friday, Katie was at Clinica Colorado in Westminster to cheer on efforts to provide more colon cancer screening for those who often can't afford the procedure. Boost for Health Centers. The American Cancer Society kicked off a two-year, $200,000 colorectal cancer screening project at the Westminster Clinic. The influx of funding is to boost federally qualified health centers to increase opportunities for colon cancer screening, according to an American Cancer Society news release. The money is coming from the American Cancer Society CEOs Against Cancer, and a consortium of leading business executives dedicated to fighting the disease all over the globe, said Greg Austin, who represented the CEO group Friday. The presentation of a $20,000 check to the Westminster Clinica Colorado comes during Colorectal Cancer Awareness Month. The money and the awareness campaign arrived just as colon cancer has moved up from being the fourth leading cause of cancer death in men and women under 50 years to first in men and second in women in less than two decades, according to the news release. Increasing uptake of screening in people 45 to 49 years, including the awareness of convenient, non-invasive stool tests, can help reverse the trend. The Cancer Society allocation will help Clinica Colorado reach those among its 4,000 patients who need access to proper screening and to defray the cost of workups, said Vanessa Vergara, medical director of the Clinica. Access is the big issue for us, Vergara said, and many just can't afford the screening. That's our biggest barrier. Most screenings cost about $1,450, she said. Many of the clinic's patients are uninsured and undocumented and are usually referred to Colonoscopy Assist, which offers help for uninsured self-pay or cash-pay patients, Vergara said. The funding will help us tremendously, she said. It will help us reach people who are really in need. Personal signs. Katie Kellerman said her husband exhibited early signs of colon cancer through a rapid weight loss of 30 to 40 pounds. She said his diarrhea was constant, as was a pain in his back. He was misdiagnosed several times before doctors found a tumor on his colon, Katie Kellerman said. By then, he was in stage 4 of his cancer. Luke spent most of his final days at home, with Katie administering morphine to him every 30 minutes to relieve his pain. Katie said she wants people as young as 25 to be screened for the disease. Otherwise, she wants her husband's legacy to be the early detection of colon cancer. If you think something's wrong, please get it checked out, Katie said. That's how he wanted to be remembered. Bio-1 of Colorado, an emergency biohazard cleanup service, goes beyond cleaning. There's a handful of companies across the Front Range that specialize in a difficult business, cleaning up after a tragedy, like the loss of a loved one. The discovery of a deceased relative or friend can be traumatic, and the idea of cleaning up afterwards can be too much, as well as hazardous. That's where companies like Bio-1 of Colorado come in. The company's workers respond round the clock to deaths, including crime scenes and other biohazard cleanup services. It's run by Matt and Krista Gregg, who aim to lead with caring compassion and put the person first. The focus always goes back to the people, said Matt. It's a big driver for the team, knowing that families shouldn't have to do this and nobody really knows how to handle it. Helping people get through a tough situation is what has fueled the couple's passion. Originally from Colorado, the couple moved out of state. Krista worked in healthcare and Matt in the automotive industry, but they didn't feel happy with their careers. While scrolling through social media, Krista often saw posts from a friend she attended Colorado State University with. Her friend's husband was the founder of Bio-1. One day, Krista decided to send her husband a text. It can't get any worse. We could clean up blood for a living, said Krista. And it was supposed to be a joke, but it turned out into one of the best decisions of our lives. It's not something they could have prepared themselves for, said Matt. But the couple went through trainings where they gained technical and business resources through mentors and bought their first franchise in North Carolina in 2019. Yearning to come back to Colorado, the couple purchased a franchise in Colorado in 2020, working remotely at first until they moved back in 2022. I lived in a bubble in Littleton for most of my life, said Krista. The things that we've experienced and the people we've been able to help, I never understood those situations existed. Having done work from Castle Rock to Boulder, Bio-1 of Colorado works across the metro area. It's logged more than 100 jobs in Douglas County alone. Bio-1 of Colorado has responded to situations where there is an unattended death and days, weeks, or even months pass before a body is discovered, as well as suicides. In those cases, local law enforcement will come to the scene, verify the death, and collect evidence. No one ever really thinks about who cleans it up, said Krista. A lot of people assume the government does it or the police do it. The reality is there are no resources unless you hire someone like Bio-1 to come and do the work. Police or a victim's advocate may have a resource list, said Krista. But if the victim's advocate isn't there and the police don't have a resource list, the families are told to Google someone to help. A lot of times, most people don't know what to do until they've experienced it, said Matt. Krista added that there's not a lot of education or resources to tell people these services exist, to help not only make the environment safe, but help and services like Bio-1 not only make the environment safe, but help walk people through a difficult process. There are some victim assistance funds by jurisdiction throughout the state, said Krista, but they don't apply to some cases. People are really worried about the cost, said Krista, but we help people submit the claim. We help take care of that entire process so families can focus on the next steps to move forward. The company can also respond to accidents where someone was injured and was taken to the hospital but left blood to be cleaned up. In addition to helping cleaning up rodent droppings, Bio1 of Colorado is also remediation certified, allowing them to remediate meth residue from affected properties. Matt is also fentanyl certified and was recently voted most valuable franchise owner of over 140 Bio1 franchises. "I'll never say I've seen everything because every single day is different," said Matt. Mom joined by hundreds at vigil for son killed in crash in Highlands Ranch by Haley Lena. Hundreds of people gathered around the family of 13-year-old Alex Makovich Thursday night at a candlelight vigil by the side of Highlands Ranch Parkway. Only a day earlier, the boy had been struck and killed by a car. "It's very hard for me to come here today and face so many people, but something has to change, and maybe it starts with my son's death," said Makovich's mother, Victoria. Amid the sounds of Makovich's family and friends, including children and young teens weeping and holding on to one another, people took turns sharing how much Alex meant to them. Fellow students came up and spoke to his humorous, fun side, prompting laughter and praising him as a classmate. His mother made a plea to parents to make a difference in kids' safety and pedestrians. "Moms of Colorado, dads of Colorado, I want you to use my son's name," said Victoria. "I am going to start talking on behalf of my son and make some kind of change." The memorial continued to grow as the night went on. Balloons, flowers, stuffed animals, photos, candles, and signs with touching messages were piled onto one another. Chalk was provided to encourage people to express their condolences. Makovich's death adds to a tragic trend, a dramatic rise in pedestrian deaths across Colorado, up by 155% in 2023 compared to a decade ago, according to data from state transportation officials. The Mountain Ridge Middle School 7th grader was crossing the intersection at Venerford Ranch Road and Highlands Ranch Parkway at 6:48 a.m. on March 6th. When a vehicle going eastbound on the parkway struck him. Makovich's mother said her son was almost across the crosswalk when he was hit. The Douglas County Sheriff's Office said no driver has been charged or cited, as the Sheriff's Office said the investigation is ongoing. The sheriff declined to release any additional information, including the crash report, at this time. According to the traffic unit at the Sheriff's Office, there have been 8 crashes at Venerford Highlands Ranch Parkway intersection in the past 3 years, none involving pedestrians. Meanwhile, neighbors and well-wishers are donating to help cover the cost of the funeral and associated expenses. A family member, Wendy Chagilski, set up a GoFundMe that raised more than $20,000 within 5 hours. Even before the vigil, an outpouring of decorations and sentimental items appeared at the intersection near where Makovich lost his life. The family said the boy was excited that morning and looking forward to his first baseball practice of the season. Alex journeyed to school that day brimming with excitement and anticipation of his first baseball practice of the season, Wendy Chagilski wrote in the GoFundMe post. Alex loved baseball and was a great athlete, proudly batting and pitching lefty. She added Alex was a light in their lives who knew him, a gentle, kind, and caring soul. The principal of the middle school, Allison Shanor, sent a letter on March 6 to the community about the loss of the student and expressed her condolences to the family, according to Paula Hans, Douglas County School District Public Information Officer. In the letter, Shanor told the community that during this period of sadness, children and teens can experience a wide range of feelings and behaviors when dealing with a tragedy such as this. The letter offered additional resources from the school district's crisis team. Pedestrian vehicle accidents trend upwards. The tragic death of Makovich comes about 5 months after the loss of another student, 13-year-old Liam Stewart of Littleton. A driver struck him with a vehicle while he was riding his bicycle to school. The driver, Beth Ann Hutchinson, pleaded guilty in February to careless driving resulting in death. In September 2023, a hit-and-run driver killed 51-year-old pedestrian Preston Dunn in Littleton. And in July, a driver hit and killed 17-year-old professional cyclist Magnus White during a training ride in Boulder, as reported by the Colorado Sun. Also, after her 21-year-old son, Brendan Lee Davis, was hit by a vehicle and died in April 2023 on Main Street in Parker Road, mom Amy Hudnall made vows similar to Makovich's mother and began a fight for better pedestrian safety. Dozens of other pedestrian and cyclist deaths occurred across the metro area and across Colorado last year, a record high and part of a death toll that has risen over time. Worsening in the past decade. The Colorado Department of Transportation reported that pedestrian fatalities made up 18% of Colorado's total roadway deaths last year. In 2013, there were 52 pedestrian deaths across the state. In 2023, there were 133. The trend led transportation to urge individuals and communities to make pedestrian safety a priority. This can be achieved through slower speeds and improved infrastructure, particularly at intersections where pedestrians cross, the transportation department wrote in a news release. Meanwhile, Makovich's family is preparing for a funeral on March 16th, but before that, his mother will return to the intersection at 6:48 a.m. each morning to the place where her son lost her life. At 6:48, you will see me here, said Makovich's mother. I can't leave this place because that's where his presence is. Thanks again for joining us for the Arapaho County News. My name is Tim Elliott.
If you enjoyed this program, please register for our free services at www.aftersight.org. Or by calling 303-786-7777.